Welcome back to Lions Collective. We're live every single Wednesday, and this week is our recap show for the 2026 NFL draft class for the Detroit Lions. And we got a lot to get to. We got an entire draft class to get to. We got the Gibbs news with Jack Campbell, the fifth-year options. Decisions have been made on both those players just for their fifth-year options. I do want to reference, before we get into this, I have to throw my hand up here, fellas, because we did our mock draft last week, and GM Jeff had the choice between Monroe Freeling or Blake Miller, and I took Monroe Freeling. This is why you don't listen to what I have to say sometimes when it comes to who the Lions are going to take, because the Lions are one of the more unpredictable teams, and it's so much fun to cover. But how are we feeling this week, kind of basically almost a week removed from the NFL draft?
I'd like to point out, Jeff, that we had a really healthy discussion after the Monroe Freeling, or maybe just before the Monroe Freeling discussion, where we kind of said, hey, if Blake Miller and Monroe are on the board there, would anybody be surprised if they go Blake Miller? And I think the unanimous opinion of this group was nah.
Yeah, but I'd like to point out that Jeff also took fourth-round pick Keontae Scott in the second round.
Hey, Will, we don't got to get to that.
Just while we're here.
That's fair.
You know what? People are calling it the steal the draft, you know? I'm just putting that out there.
That's true.
The draft.
I'll say this,
Keith
too.
Keith Abney and Keontae Scott.
I'll say this too. Me and Cole were talking about Kyle Lewis as a second round pick. The guy didn't go until like the fifth, sixth round. So, you know what? A lot of things happened. All right.
You know what? They're wrong. They're just wrong. No, they're wrong. I know more than NFL people, obviously. Yeah. That's
the thing we're here. That was actually
This is the anchors Brad talks about. You were anchored on Kyle Lewis since
January. Oh, big time.
Couldn't get off of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Brad goes and gets his guy. Why can't I? You know?
That's fair. Yeah, you know, it was awesome. I mean, the draft is always fun to cover. Brad makes it a lot of fun, especially when he takes an edge, you know, which, you know, you guys got to talk to him afterwards, and I bet he had no better feeling than walking up to that podium after taking an edge. You know, we're going to talk about that today. I do want to start with the more recent news before we get to the draft stuff with the Gibbs and Campbell fifth-year option, because they accepted, or they, you know, opted into Gibbs's fifth-year option. It's a, you know, $14 million. And I think, you know, when you look at the running back market, fair number. Now, Jack Campbell, a little different. And, you know, it's a $22 million. It's a lot. It's kind of like the Tyler Lindenbaum thing with the Ravens. Like, Tyler was going to make a lot of money as a center in his fifth year. They declined it. Obviously, he went and signed elsewhere. But when people saw the news, I think maybe that just seeing it, maybe people had the wrong idea in their minds of, like, maybe questioning the future of Jack Campbell. But can you guys kind of give your background, your take on kind of what's going on with those fifth-year options and the extensions that are ready to come for both those guys?
I will admit that I still am a little surprised they declined it. And the reason I say that is, to me, it just seemed like a given, even though the amount was what it was. I think when he ultimately gets his extension, the average of that extension is going to be right in that ballpark of $22 million, I'm guessing, or, you know, give or take a million. And so he doesn't have to play on that, right? Like, you can get the extension done and bake that in. And that's kind of how I always saw this thing playing out. So, you know, now you go into a situation that if you can't get an extension done, and I don't think that's going to happen, but if you couldn't, now you're talking about the franchise tag to retain him. And I peeped really quickly at what the franchise tag is projected to be for linebacker in 27, and it's 30 mil. And so not great. And people, you know, you might wonder, like, why is a linebacker's franchise tag so high? It's because a lot of these rush linebackers hold that position title, right? So you got your Micah Parsons, your Brian Burns of the world, these guys that have these monster deals get baked into the top 10, top five averages for these contracts. And so that's what put the Lions, I guess, in a little bit of a predicament here. But I still think the extension is going to get done. I think they're banking on relationship and loyalty ultimately. But still, I thought, you know, it doesn't change his leverage, which is through the roof. I just thought they were going to do it just to make sure that they kind of, you know, had a fallback and things didn't go the way they thought they would.
Yeah, Jack Campbell's not going anywhere. I've actually been kind of annoyed by some of a speculation from like either rival fan accounts or even some national media members who have pointed out falsely that like this is the dilemma when you draft a linebacker in the first round. They aren't worth the cost of their second contract when their first contract comes up, as if the Lions aren't going to turn around and sign Jack Campbell to a 5-year, $100 million deal probably tomorrow. Like he is still very much a central piece of their team, of their defense. Like they drafted him back in 2023 to be the tent pole of their defense for a decade, and he is well on his way to becoming that. So the decision yesterday doesn't change at all where he stands with this team, and I would expect this extension to get done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, the fact that they declined it, to me, maybe, I guess my first thought is, oh, they probably think they can save more than the $22 million, maybe a significant amount for them to make a move like that where they wouldn't pick it up. Because I think it is kind of common knowledge, like, okay, you have this guy that's performing well, you want to pick up that contract at that extra year. But I think it's probably a combination of one, they know Jack's not going anywhere. Like Jack is probably the least one that they're worried about out of the four extension eligible guys from 2023, just because he just fits them to a T and he's pretty low key. So I'm not really worried about them getting something long-term done with him versus maybe some of the other guys out there. And then also you have to factor in, obviously, inside linebackers are counted with outside linebackers, which includes edge rushers, which is why that number $21.9 million is so high. And if anything, I'm happy that this is shining a light on that conversation. I know there were some takes that Bertie just mentioned that, you know, we got to get past that. Like they got a good player, 18th overall, and they took him and didn't think twice about it. And he's an all pro now. So the fact that we're still having that conversation kind of pisses me off a little bit. But in terms of inside linebackers being grouped into this, it does feel like a bit of a broken system. Like that number should not be that high for a player like Jack. Just quite frankly, he would be the highest paid linebacker in NFL history. He still might be on a deal that works for both sides, but at that number, I understand why the Lions declined that and said, hey, this guy is a Lion through and through. We know what he's about. We're not worried about getting something long-term done. Let's just kind of, you know, hunker down and figure this out together without having to pick up this option. So that's what it read to me. I assume that's what's happening, but you know, I get some of the takes out there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have two. I mean, looking at both of their projected extensions, I mean, assuming both those guys want to reset the market, Fred Warner is the highest paid linebacker. I think he's making, you know, basically like $20 million. Like, not compared to like Odafe Owe, who's making like $25 million as like an outside linebacker. But Jahmyr Gibbs, Saquon Barkley's the highest paid running back at about $20 million. What's maybe a fair ballpark number that you guys expect both those guys to get, just for Lions fans to maybe get an idea of what's to come for both those players?
Let me start with Campbell. I know Warner just topped it, I think $21 million per year. But, you know, I was kind of working off the Roquan Smith deal, and that was signed, I believe, ahead of the 23 season. He got 5 years, 100 mil. So he's getting $20 million per season. You factor in inflation that's happened with the cap, you know, since 23, it's been about, I don't know, 25-30%. Like Jack's not getting 25% more than 20 million, but you know, it's that classic he who signs last signs for most situation. And so I had loosely kind of projected it, his new money as being 4 years, 90 million. So 22 and a half. I still think that's kind of a safe number, especially given it doesn't kick in till 27. You know, and then the guarantees are the other part of that. I mean, you start kind of weighing what the guarantees or the percentage of the guarantees look like compared to Warner, compared to Smith. You know, those are the ultimate numbers that I guess are a symbol of a commitment to a guy.
Yeah, I haven't done contract projections yet, so I'm not sure what the ballpark would be. I think anything north of 20 probably makes sense for him. I assume the Lions would like that closer to 20 than 22, but again, I think it's just about where you are at that point in time. Gibbs is interesting because what's the number right now for running backs to beat?
Is like it 21? Saquon?
Yeah. Basically, yeah. 21. Almost
on a 2-year deal, though.
Yeah. I think given what Gibbs has done for them in 3 years, his age, the fact that they call him an offensive weapon, not a running back, I think they're pretty comfortable giving him whatever he wants at this point. I think he's going to be here long term. You know, Dan was talking about at owners meetings. You know, when you draft a player that high, a running back, you have to have a plan for him. But also, they think that he's still scratching the surface of what he can be as a receiver and the things that they can do with him in the passing game. They obviously are making him their committed RB1 this year. David Montgomery isn't here anymore. So they are firmly factoring him into their future plan. So at this point, I think the ball's in Gibbs' court, and whatever he wants, he's probably going to get at that point. But obviously, Jack's situation is a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, Jay Raj, I was eyeing that Roquan Smith deal too, and I almost feel like the Lions could make the same offer to Jack Campbell and maybe include more guaranteed money and see if there is an agreement there in place. It wouldn't shock me if Jack Campbell accepts a five-year, $100 million deal, even though it wouldn't reset the linebacker market. I don't know how much he really cares about that. If you offer him $20 million per year for the next 5 years and more guaranteed money than Roquan Smith got, which I think was it's like 45 total fully guaranteed and 60 in potential guaranteed, I wouldn't be shocked if he took that. And it also wouldn't shock me if Gibbs and Campbell end up signing for the same average annual value on their contracts. Like both these guys could just be $20 million per year players for – you know, 3, 4, 5 years. One of the conveniences, I guess, of declining Campbell's option and then beginning his extension in 2027 is that you're probably locking both of these guys in for the same term in the end. Like Gibbs isn't going to get, in my mind, the same amount of term as Campbell. He might get, say, a 3-year, $60 million deal, 4-year, $80 million deal. But both of those deals, once Gibbs' fifth-year option kicks in, will run through the 2030 season, and so you have them in the on the same timeline in the end. But I think $20 million per year for Jack Campbell very well could get it done.
I just went to Bass Pro Shop while you were talking, Will, and I sorted by most expensive fishing reel. $3,400. I mean, it's expensive, but I think you could afford that on a $100 million deal. So I think Jack will be okay with that. I still think that, you know, just given the nature of the NFL, you know, he will reset it. You know, if it's 5 years, there's so few guys that get 5 years, but you know, I agree with you. Like he's kind of the type that would. Gibbs, I really struggle seeing getting more than a 3-year extension. And again, I anticipate that getting done prior to the 5th year option kicking in and then them baking that into the contract. I think very similar numbers. I think I projected it 356, and what that does is that's the $14.3 million for the 5th year, and then it's an average of $21 million a year for the new 2 years. And so you get that ability once again to say, oh, I'm the highest paid running back. You know, the Kirby Joseph argument, as we, you know, maybe refer to it around here. You know, just that brief time period where you could say, I am the highest paid at my position. It does matter to those guys. You know, it's a badge of honor, and I could see both of them, you know, I still think both of them will experience that distinction.
Yeah, when you're paying a lot of players, you have to hit on draft picks, and they just finished their 2026 NFL draft class. And I know we talked a little bit about Blake Miller, but I guess we'll just start. We're not going to go through every single draft pick. Like the shout out Tyree West, you know, but we don't have to dive into Tyree West today. We'll start with Blake Miller. When he was selected, I think we took, like Justin alluded to earlier and talked about, like we were on board with the human and the player, the fit, how much, you know, and you talked, actually you talked a lot about it, Colton, last show, about how much, you know, of a fit he would be. But what now that we're a week removed and, you know, you got to speak to Blake Miller as well, what is kind of your thoughts on the fit there, maybe why they went with Blake Miller, and just how much, I guess, looking at this offensive line, just the looking into the future, the outlook of this offensive line with Blake Miller?
Lead us off, Colton.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all saw the fit with Blake. I think a lot of that came from the combine when he was up there talking about that wrist surgery, which I'm glad that was a big point of emphasis. It seemed like there are definitely some tells with Blake that you're just listening to him talk and you're just like, yeah, this guy's a lion. And that dates back to when we first saw him at the combine, but also the more you dig into him throughout the process, talking to him when he came in, you know, he told a story like, you know, how'd you end up at right tackle if you were a college or a high school left tackle? And he's like, well, the warm-up line was shorter at right tackle. I think Dabo Sweeney told us that. You know, that line was shorter, so we hopped in there and, you know, found a spot and, you know, made it work for 4 years. So he's just a chill dude that will fit in like a glove. But then you hear him talk, and he says, you know, his favorite thing is, you know, taking someone's will away, will to compete. You get to the fourth quarter. I guess when you start a game and you're going up against an edge rusher and he's, you know, chomping at the bit, trying to come after you and get a sack, By the time the fourth quarter rolls around, you want to see him looking towards the sideline and, you know, asking to be subbed out. Like, that's essentially what he was saying. And I'm like, if he was saying that in the meetings, let me tell you, they were probably sold on him pretty early in that process. So I just think he fits, man. The experience, you know, obviously there are different types of tackles in this draft. And, you know, we spent a good amount of time talking about it in the last episode. Like, I don't think Monroe Freeling is a bad player. I really don't. But I even said last week that I thought that the Lions might prefer Blake Miller, one, because of the experience, two, because of the culture stuff, and three, it seemed to me, now that we have, you know, more info from Brad, that the Lions were looking for sort of this plug and play guy that can compete right away, you know, clean technique for the most part, you know, wasn't going to be sort of this project like a Max Ahanachor. Even Monroe Freeling had some youth on his tape. So Blake Miller gives you that experience. He's a plug and play guy and he's high character, and he has the athleticism, and I think Brad still thinks that he's an ascending player. So the fact you can get all that in one player at 17, it makes sense why they were interested in him and even had discussions to come up for him. So made a lot of sense after talking to him, but also as the pre-draft process was playing out.
Yeah. Just to finish off that story too, about Blake Miller jumping in the right tackle line, that was during a summer practice. One of his first practices at Clemson, the coaches weren't allowed on the field yet based on NCAA rules back then. And so he gets in the right tackle line, and Clemson's 2-year starter at right tackle sees him there. And after practice, he calls Dabo Sweeney and he's like, yo, move me to guard. Like, we got to get this kid on the field now. Like, and so they did. They moved their 2-year junior starter at right tackle to guard to accommodate Blake Miller at right tackle, a position he had never played before really in his life. And the rest obviously is history. He sets the program record there for snaps played and never missed a game in his 4 years. So, I mean, just like Colton said, a Lion all the way through. Broader view here, briefly, I appreciate and respect the fact that the Lions set a clear priority this offseason of refortifying their offensive line and then followed through from start to finish. Like, their biggest move in free agency, obviously, was Cade Mays to stabilize the center spot. Even the biggest trade they swung with David Montgomery kind of hinged on getting Juice Scruggs back, who won't be a starter but could be pretty valuable depth. And then obviously their biggest move in the draft was spending the 17th overall pick on Blake Miller. And you look up now at this offensive line compared to when the season ended 3 months ago, and you get the sense that this could once again be one of the better units in the NFC, and in time, one of the best. I think a lot of us pointed out the fact that now their oldest player on this offensive line, which last year was feeling pretty rickety by season's end, is Cade Mays at 26. And you can make the case that, like, the most seasoned player is Penei Sewell, who's a three-time All-Pro about to enter, I think, his age 25 season. He's got more starts than all the other four projected starters combined. So when you plug in Cade Mays, who feels like an ascending player at center, and you plug in Blake Miller, who feels like a pretty high floor right tackle who will start from day one, you have lifted the entire floor of the unit. And I still think the ceiling, as those guys continue to get better, is pretty high. And it's not as simple as just saying, like, Christian Mahogany starts, as much as it pains me to say this as a BC guy, on day one at left guard. Like, that competition is now up for grabs in training camp. That could be Miles Frazier's spot come week one. It could be, I don't know, even Ben Barcher's spot if he shows enough in camp. So the Lions have rebuilt that unit from the starters to the, you know, the second level guys into what could be, you know, one of the stronger offensive lines again in the NFL. And that was essential. And then with Blake Miller, he, as Brad Holmes said, was one of, if not the best, run blocking tackles in this draft. And, you know, with Francis Maui-Noah and Caden Proctor now both projected or both slated to play guard for the teams that drafted them in the first round, you're looking at Blake Miller as maybe the best run blocking offensive tackle in this draft. And that's part of the Lions wanting to recapture their, like, violent downhill demeanor that they definitely lost last season.
Colton brought up the combine story. We, you know, I think several of us were at that session because we knew the need. And when he told the story about the surgery on his wrist and causing him to miss a spring practice, and I believe the term he used was, it pissed him off.
He goes, that sucked. It kind of sucked.
Yeah. I feel like we all just kind of looked at each other and, like, I kept calling him, like, from an attitude perspective, the Jack Campbell of offensive tackles, right? Guy plays through injury, plays in a meaningless bowl game. I mean, relatively speaking, meaningless bowl game. And a friend of mine texted me after the selection. He had snapshotted a text I had sent him after the combine where I was like, this is the dude they're drafting. Like, it just, it felt that way all along. And, you know, in a vacuum, I still would say I like Monroe Freeling better. Like, if I was starting a franchise from scratch, give me the left tackle that's super polished as a pass protector. But like, the margin is narrowed to a sliver when you factor in what the Lions were looking for specifically. And the thing I had a problem with my own projection of Freeling as the pick was, how did that work on the practice field, right? Like, it was very clear they saw Larry Borum as a right tackle. They were going to flip Penei Sewell to left. Well, Freeling, I understand he played a little bit of right tackle at some point, but he was a left tackle. And so you've created a really weird practice dynamic that, you know, kind of puts Penei in this weird bind of where he's playing this season. And so I think at some level that factored in. But, you know, Will, you brought up the run game, and that was something Brett Holmes very specifically brought up, right? I just pulled up the numbers. Monroe Freeling played 1,667 pass or overall snaps in his college career. Blake Miller had 1,580 run blocking snaps, like almost as many run blocking snaps. And when you watch the tape, like, he can do it all, right? Like, he can block with power. He can kick out an end. He can get on the move. He can climb to the next level. He said his favorite block is wide zone and getting out there and kind of weighing lace to a defensive back, which I guess that would probably be my favorite thing too, if I was 320 pounds. and so, you know, you look at Drew Petzing's very versatile kind of mindset to the run game, and Miller's kind of wealth of experience and kind of executing all those different varied assignments that are, you know, available to an offensive lineman, offensive tackle. I you know, the fit is really, really easy to see.
Yeah. To build off that too, like, I really like the fact that the Lions didn't feel a need to hit home runs in this draft. And it's something we've discussed. They already have hit home runs with their roster and take their first two picks. Like, they didn't need the Monroe Freeling at tackle when you already have the star in Penei Sewell, and they didn't necessarily need the highest ceiling edge rusher when you already have Hutchinson across from that player and Derek Moore. And so this to me was just about finding starting caliber players from day one who can elevate this team, not just looking down the line, but more specifically maybe in 2026 when they are firmly in their Super Bowl window.
And Justin, yeah, just to echo something you – sorry, Jeff. Just, no. Justin, just to echo something you said about the fit with Freeling, like, I totally agree, and I was thinking about that the closer we got to the draft. Like, if you're telling everyone you want to move Penei Sewell to left tackle and Freeling is your guy and he's a left tackle, that gets a little awkward. Do you just keep Penei at right tackle? And what if Freeling isn't ready? And then you have Penei and Borum both repping right. You just move Penei over at, like, late in training camp at that point where he doesn't have a lot of time to get the time on task. Maybe just feel good because he's done it before in college, but that would be a little awkward in my opinion. And so to get a guy like Blake Miller that has so much experience at right tackle and has the culture, the athleticism, like, he's still a 990 relative athletic score, by the way. So he's got some movement skills and he can pull and do all the fun things that you want in the run game. Getting a guy like that at right tackle and just saying, this is going to be our alignment for the year. I think that makes a ton of sense. And then the added benefit of moving Penei to left tackle is now you have a veteran, like, established guy in Penei on the left side to protect Jared's blind side. You have an ascending, you know, just now scratching the surface of what he can be, you think, center in Cade Mays. Then you put Christian Mahogany between those guys. I think he's going to be set up for success in 2026 in ways that he really wasn't in 2025. I think playing next to Penei and Cade can really elevate his game. Talking about Mahogany. And then even if the Lions are moving towards more of a gap scheme, I think that can also elevate his game. So you're talking about putting your best five on the field and how you can do that in a draft like this. I think they kind of hit it out of the park with that alignment. I think it's really going to pay off for them.
I think when they get to the practice field this year where, you know, they're putting Borum against Miller, and I think Miller's going to start week one. I do, but if for whatever reason the initial window is clunky, you know, they'll have seen those two guys head to head in practice and can comfortably go with Borum early and plan on moving to Miller, whether it's, you know, week four or midseason or 2027.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think fans, you know, in the past, you know, I think people go at Brad for players, maybe drafting players that are looked at as projects, but his first two round picks this year were guys that were looked at as high floor, which everybody should be ecstatic with that. Like I've been clamoring for Brad to get guys that can impact the Detroit Lions right away in 2026. So, you know, when people are upset after the Blake Miller pick over Monroe Freeling, it's just like, it's probably the same people in my eyes that are complaining about guys that don't help the team right away. So I think it's actually, I find it hilarious. I mean, even Derek Moore, I know he wasn't, at least I'll speak for myself. Like he's someone that, you know, I covered and he's a good football player, but he just wasn't someone, he's not the sexy pick in terms of like in the second round, you look at guys that were maybe bigger names, but like Derek Moore checks all the boxes. Like he had 10 sacks at Michigan. He was getting all the attention from opposing offensive lines. He had multiple games with two sacks. I know the narrative was out there where he disappears in big games, but it's like the guy, I mean, we have to at least give credit to Derek Moore for taking care of tackles that aren't that good. Like, I think that would be more worrying to me if this guy's just getting, he's disappearing against like Rutgers, with all due respect. Like, no, he's dominating competition. I mean, he led the Big Ten in pressure percentage. He had a 36% pass rush win rate in true pass rush situations, which ranked 10th among edge rushers with 100 reps. Like I like Derek Moore a lot, and they traded up to get him. So it's someone that's been on the radar, and they met with him as well, which I should have saw probably coming from a mile away. But Brad Holmes addressed edge, and in my opinion, it's the first since Hutch in terms of like the highest pure edge. Like Josh was kind of the tweener, but Derek's a pass rusher. He wins one-on-ones, and he didn't play with any player close to the caliber of an Aiden Hutchinson at Michigan his final year, and he still produced. But what did you guys think of Derek Moore? I mean, him getting edge, I mean, it was another position that people were clamoring to kind of add to. Obviously, DJ Wanham was signed. The room was a little bare, but now you get Derek Moore in there, who's a young ascending player. Even Blake and Derek looked at as high-floor guys. Like, these guys are 22, 23 years old. Like, clearly they're going to get better as well. I think that term kind of gets used a lot as well. But what did you guys think of Derek Moore in the fifth there playing alongside his fellow Michigan alum Aiden Hutchinson?
Yeah, so first of all, Jeff, I agree. I like that this draft as a whole upended a whole bunch of narratives about Brad Holmes' draft approach. Like, one, that he doesn't prioritize need. Two, that he doesn't prioritize premium positions. Three, that he takes too many chances on injury-prone players. Four, that he takes too many chances on developmental prospects. And then you look at this draft from top to bottom, start to finish, and in the first round, it's an offensive tackle filling a need. In the second round, it's an edge rusher they traded up for filling a need. And then it's a bunch of guys along with those two who have long, healthy track records who look like, you know, they can contribute pretty early in their careers. Like, there isn't much projecting in this draft class, especially early on. So if that was a misgiving of yours before this draft, you would have to walk away from this one pretty satisfied. I like that Derek Moore, at least as a rookie, feels like a pretty natural complement to DJ Wanham. And I don't think we could have said the same thing about Zion Young for those who are clamoring for the Lions to draft Young over Moore. I think Moore is a more developed pass rusher than Zion Young was at Missouri. If you read about Moore, like the book on him is that he's probably an NFL-ready edge setter run defender right now, but he would struggle early on to make an impact as a pass rusher. And I think that would be a little bit redundant to what they already have in DJ Wanham for 1 year. Whereas Derek Moore is the opposite. Like he can play on those pass rushing downs. DJ Wanham is still probably your starting edge rusher opposite Hutch in early downs. And he's more rugged and physical against the run, but the duo of Wanham and Moore gives the Lions a pretty nice combination opposite Hutch that say DJ Wanham and Zion Young might not have. And to me, like, is Derek Moore plus DJ Wanham better over the course of the year than Marcus Davenport and Aquadine Muhammad was last year? Yeah, I think it is. I think it will be. The sack numbers might not reflect that by the end of the year. But first of all, the availability that you hope to get out of Wanham is an instant upgrade over Davenport. And, you know, I think over the course of the season, Derek Moore could evolve into much more of a player than Al-Quadin Muhammad was as just a pure pass rusher. So I like the fit there. I like the fact that the Lions have created the defensive end that they've been searching for in the combination of Wanham and Derek Moore. And once Wanham is likely gone in 2027, that's when you expect Derek Moore to grow into more of that three down role as an edge rusher.
Yeah. You know, of the edges that were still available, you know, I really like Zion's tape, you know, but I questioned all along, you know, whether there was enough smoke with the character concerns that, you know, that pushed him down or off of Detroit's board altogether. I know a lot of people liked Yakus. He looked the part, but just the run tape was weird. Like it felt like it should have been better. And so I like the Moore pick. I like the way it complements Wanham. There's things that he does really, really well on tape. In terms of first step, he's got some bend. He's really good at slicing inside. I think they're gonna be able to run some nice games with him in terms of, you know, looping inside on stunts. I think he's got a feel for that. The run game, you know, he's not dominant, but the way I kind of described it is anything that kind of gets in his vicinity, he finishes. Like he's really good at tackling in space. He's good at shedding late. He doesn't let a lot of ball carriers get past his gap, even if he's not, you know, making a lot of those stops in the backfield or discarding tackles with ease as somebody, you know, that might be 20 pounds heavier. But, you know, that was the thing that I came away with draft night, was like his kind of over the top commitment to alleviating those concerns, right? He wants to be that guy that can be reliable every three down or all three downs. I think it's really good that Brad got a tackle and an edge going in this draft, you know, two transitions, two biggest needs, certainly 2027 and beyond. I think we have to always temper our expectations when you draft an edge in the second round. I pulled up the list from the last decade and it's, you know, there's some dudes on there, but mostly it's not pretty. But if he can be a guy that gives you 6 to 8 sacks, gives you 30 or so snaps, whether it's, you know, that complement to Wanham or, you know, the other really key part of that is taking something off of Aiden Hutchinson's plate, right? Like that dude's playing 90% of snaps. Bring that down to 80. It's going to make him fresher as well in those critical situations. You know, that's going to be kind of the hidden value, I think, of Derek Moore.
I'll tell you what, I will never forget the look on Brad's face when he came down after day two and was talking about Derek Moore. Even before he started talking, he comes down there and just goes, if you guys haven't seen it, I think Noam Bianchi put out a video that was Friday night, put out the video of Brad coming down. He has this look on his face. He walks up to the mic. He's just like, what'd I tell you? I got one. You happy with me?
Well, he was we were all kind of smirking because, like, I mean, it was the unwritten, the unspoken fact that he finally took an edge. And so we're all kind of smirking. He looks at us and he's like, I didn't say anything.
I didn't say anything.
I didn't say anything.
And funny thing is, I was happy that he came down so early because that meant we were basically going to get out of there early. That's why I was really happy, but I understand the edge stuff. But yeah, man, like I think where I'll go with this is a lot of people are wondering why Derek Moore over some of the other edges that were available. Justin, you hit on some of that a little bit, but I think you have to look at these teams have more intel than we do. I think the Lions do a really good job of figuring out like which teams are targeting which players. I think there was a report in 2023 that the Jets had interest in Jahmyr Gibbs. I think their GM at the time actually came out later and said, we were fully set on picking Jahmyr Gibbs 15th overall if he were still there. And obviously the Lions probably knew that and traded down, were able to get to 12 and just didn't think twice about taking him there. So the Lions are pretty good at kind of figuring out like which teams are looking for which players, which teams are zeroed in on which guys. So the fact that they traded up to 44 is interesting to me. And their reports, I think when day two got rolling, that the Lions were trying to come up for an edge. And I think Albert Breer might've put that out there or someone else. So that kind of piqued my interest. Like, okay, who would they come up for? So they trade up 6 spots, part ways with 128, which you got in the David Montgomery trade. So some value there. I didn't really think much of that. Like, it seems like a lot of these teams didn't think day 3 was kind of littered with talent, especially after NIL is putting these kids back in school. So I think Brad is one of those GMs that's like, I'm going to get my guys. I don't care about sacrificing some day three capital. So to move up six spots pretty easily, I think the value was like dead even on the Rich Hill chart. You just had to wonder, like, okay, which one is coming up for? Is it going to be Zion? It's going to be Gabe Atkins? Like, which one is going to be? And then he takes Moore. And you start to look into the reasons why. Who was picking 45th? The Baltimore Ravens. Where is Moore from? Baltimore. Who is the Ravens head coach? Jesse Minter. Who was Moore's DC at Michigan at one time? Jesse Minter. So connecting some dots there, you know, Brad was asked about that. And it's like, you know, we kind of figured they might be in the market for an edge. So to me, that kind of said a lot without saying it specifically. But I think they probably knew, like, we have to jump this line on before this run on edges comes. And yeah, they, you know, let's say he wasn't available. He got picked like one pick before. You know, at that point, I wouldn't be surprised the Lions pivoted if they really didn't like an edge rusher, because we've seen them do it before. But the fact that they were able to get their guy, and Brad came out and said, Derek Moore was the number one ranked edge rusher on our board entering day two, with guys like TJ Parker and R. Mason and some of these other guys, Cassius Howell, which we didn't think were full fits, but like other guys were ranked higher consensually than Derek Moore. The fact that he went up and got his guy, you know, that speaks volumes to me, because Brad has been right about moves like that before, whether it's, you know, Sam LaPorta over Michael Mayer or some of these other picks. Could have taken a corner in at 18, but you take Jack Campbell. I'm sure they'd rather have him than Deontay Banks with the Giants right now. So he's been proven right with moves like this more often than not. So the fact that he thinks that Moore was the best of that available crop kind of speaks volumes to me, and I'm excited to see where Derek Moore's career goes here.
Well, Colton, finishing that story, I mean, he was right immediately, because Baltimore next pick took Zion Young. So, I mean, they clearly were in the market for an edge, and appreciate Brad making me look good, because I made that joke ahead of the draft that Zion Young was going to be a Baltimore Raven one way or another. Perfect fit.
Absolutely.
Now, before we move on and kind of get to the rest of the players here, I do have to tell you about our sponsor of the show, proud sponsor, Prize Picks, which you can play $5, you get $50 instantly, use the code HMA. I have to show off my picks, which, by the way, no John Collins, but you know what I do have is three picks for tonight's game. It's actually in 20 minutes, so you're going to want to get this in pretty quickly. All right, these are the picks I'm going with. So I just want to apologize, just to kind of tracking the picks. I had Jalen Duren, points, rebounds. He's on a milk carton this series. So I that one's on me, hand up. He has not been been the player I expected him to be. But, Cade, in an elimination game, we're going more on the 28.5 points. Trust me, this man's not going out without a fight, even if he takes 40 shots. Cade Cunningham, I got him over 28.5. I'm going Tobias Harris. He's been the second option. Shout out to Tobias Harris. Not ideal, but I think he's going to take a ton of shots tonight as well as a second option. I'm going more, 14.5 field goal attempts, and then I'm going more Wendell. I'm actually fading Duren. I'm going more Wendell Carter, 10.5 points, because he's with Angel Reese and it's in his head. So I'm going Wendell Carter more in Orlando with Angel Reese probably in attendance. So those are my three picks, Wendell, Tobias, and Cade Cunningham. Like I said, you play $5, get $50 instantly, use the code HMA, and shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show. We'll see how that ages. We never know. I want to get to the next selection here. Again, there's probably two more we should probably cover. The Jimmy Rolder, Keith Abney the second. Those are probably the two big ones here. I'll be honest. Jimmy Rolder, I had to Google. Okay, I'm just throwing the hand up here. Didn't watch. I'm not a Michigan fan. I'm not a Michigan or Michigan State fan. It's a complicated relationship. So I wasn't watching a ton of Michigan games. Love college football, though. But I had to look into more of Jimmy Rolder and actually find out. Because like Colton said, I actually agree 1,000%. Like, I think day three in this draft was rough. Like, you probably couldn't have convinced a lot of GMs just to end it after day two and just sign all these guys as UDFAs. Like, there wasn't a lot of gems. Now, Keith Abney we'll get into. I think he's a gem. But people try and kind of dissect it a little too much, like in the fourth round, who you're taking. They took a guy they absolutely love, Jimmy Rolder, the linebacker out of Michigan. Only 4 missed tackles last season. Very good run defender. And I think he's got upside in coverage. I think we had allowed an 80 pass rating allowed when targeted. He's not Anzalone, obviously, right away. But he has some of that upside as well when it comes to that. But what do you guys think of another position of need, by the way? Linebacker, yeah. We talked about tackle, defensive end linebacker. He went linebacker. Jimmy rolled around in Michigan. What are your guys' thoughts on that pick?
The Lions don't draft for need, but if you had shown someone this draft class and then shown them the Lions' needs and they didn't know the Lions' draft philosophy, they'd be like, oh, this team wants drafting for need. And, again, I think that should be refreshing for a large portion of the fan base. Dan Campbell said since the end of last season they wanted to add competition to this roster, and it feels like they did it. They accomplished it with almost every single pick in this draft, starting with the very first one. Obviously, Blake Miller is a direct competition for Larry Borum. We all expect him to beat Larry Borum out for that starting spot. Derek Moore should eventually take over for DJ Wonnum as the team's hopefully three down long-term edge. And then you look at Jimmy Rolder, like he feels a lot like Malcolm Rodriguez. He should push Rodrigo for playing time in 2026 and could replace him long-term, Rodrigo on just a one-year deal. Keith Abney is going to compete with McCreary and probably even Christian Izian, both on one-year deal themselves for that starting nickel spot, and could become the long-term replacement for Amik Robertson. Like Kendrick Law, it looks like a clone in a lot of ways to Dominic Lovett. He's going to push Lovett, I would guess, for a roster spot and could eventually become the replacement to Greg Dortch, who was a replacement already for Khalif Raymond. Like even down to Skylar Gill-Howard in the sixth round, he looks like a clone to Mekhi Wingo. He's going to push Mekhi Wingo for a roster spot. And like Wingo and Lovett are relatively recent draft picks, but I like the fact the Lions are putting some real heat into camp with not just position battles, but roster battles involving young players. Got guys who've only been added to this team recently. So Jimmy Rolder very well could claim some of Rodrigo's role as the season goes on. You know, I still think the Lions have a pretty big question to answer in the middle of their defensive line. That feels like the one neglected position so far this offseason. But yeah, I like the fact that they have followed through on Dan Campbell's aim to add more competition to this roster, and it's going to heat up from day one in camp.
Rolder to me feels like their biggest upside pick, right? Like there's not a ton of tape for him. I think he played 900 defensive snaps in college, only played more than 500 once. Still a lot of kind of untapped potential and development, but you know, extremely athletic. You mentioned the tackling stats, Jeff. Like there's a lot of positive. I think right out the box, like he's going to be a big time special teams contributor as he kind of grows into that role, which I think Malcolm can very capably hold down for the duration of the season if the need be, right? Like talk about a high floor guy. That's what Malcolm Rodriguez is pretty high floor. I love the Abney selection. That was another guy I walked away from the combine writing about. You know, I hung around his press session there for a while and was really kind of taken about the way he talked about tackling, his passion for being a guy that can be trusted as a tackler. And he's only played really outside in college, but I asked him just kind of about nickel in Indianapolis and he was all about it and reaffirmed that I think that's where he's going to end up. And I think he's going to start pretty early for this team. You know, I look at it kind of like the Ennis situation where they were ready to pull the trigger on Ennis over Amik very early in his rookie season. I could see that happening. McCreary, he's not just a Jag. He's a little bit above that, but I think Abney's their future there. And Law was not on my radar. I didn't study receivers at all going into this draft. I was joking. Like I didn't even know the guys in the first round outside of their names because why bother? Right. But catching up on his game, he fully fits what the Lions do, right? Like this is a team that has led the NFL in yak the last two seasons. Law had 505 of his 547 yards after the catch. You say push Dominic Lovett. I think, I know you mentioned him later in that statement, like he is Greg Dortch, right? But he's a bigger body guy who kind of is a nasty blocker. You know, he's not the tallest guy, but he's 200 pounds. He's thickly built and he gets after it. He did a lot of blocking at Alabama before he transferred to Kentucky. I think there's some nice upside there as wide receiver four in this scheme. I think he fits really well with what the Lions like to do, taking advantage of Goff's ability to be accurate and tempo and timing with his throws to get his weapons in space. He's just going to be another weapon in that regard. And again, special teams contributions, right? That's another guy that's going to push for multiple roles, whether it's return game, gunner, really early value. And so yeah, I think Brad did a really, really nice job of, you know, going into this draft, I didn't think they had any immediate need. Like, they didn't have to get anybody for 2026. Like, they were kind of, they had stop gaps everywhere, but now they've got guys that are going to push for roles in 2026 and should very capably fill them in 2027 and beyond. And that's what you want out of a draft.
I think my takeaway is while they drafted for need, absolutely, when you look at their first two picks in particular, they didn't compromise like their scouting process and what they look for to fill those needs. Getting a guy like Blake Miller, who we talked about a lot on the show already, but Blake Miller fits him like a glove. Getting Derek Moore over some of the other pass rushers that were available, there's a reason for that. It's very easy to dive into if you take the time to do it. Some people don't want to take that time, but it's very easy to see the fit, why they went with those two players. They are high floor, early contributors that are going to play a lot of football as rookies and probably beyond here too. And then you get into day three, and we know Brad usually doesn't dive into day three, but he was sounded pretty excited about some of the guys that he ended up getting. And I don't think he thought he would be able to get all these guys at where he got them, especially Keith Abney. Abney, I agree, Justin. I think he's a guy that could probably push for playing time, whether it's might not be right away. I could see him being one of those dudes that we're writing about on day three of training camp or whenever the first day of pads go on. And you're just like, yeah, he's different. He's out here, you know, making plays in a hurry. Can certainly see that from him. I could see him working his way in to that lineup. And I think if you're looking at him as like a Meek Robertson replacement, like his upside is way higher than Amik's ever was. So I think that's a great pick. Getting him in the fifth round is an absolute steal. I think he was number 61 overall on Dane Brugler's board. So great value there. Jimmy Roeder, he's a guy that is more of an instinctive downhill linebacker, run stuffing linebacker, but I think the athleticism, I want to say is, what was his RAS? Like 9.53, I want to say.
Super
that,
high.
That gives you sort of the intrigue that he can be a good coverage linebacker in due time once he kind of figures out the NFL and how teams are trying to attack him. And working with a guy like Kelvin Shepherd, who can get the most out of him too, I think is not something to discount in this scenario with a guy like Jimmy Roeder. And as much as I love Kyle Lewis, I think I was pretty adamant, like, I'm not sure if the Lions are going to like him. He's just one of my guys. And I thought that that defense could probably use a guy with some versatility and flexibility, especially with Brian Branch out for the time being. But I understood why they didn't go that route. A lot of teams didn't go that route with him. That's why he fell to the fifth round or whatever it was. But I don't hate the move getting Jimmy Roeder because he's more their type. Like, he's bigger. He's 6'2", you know, 240-ish. He's more your traditional linebacker size. And he gives you the athleticism to potentially think he can grow into a good coverage player in due time. So I don't hate that. Let him learn from Malcolm and these guys for at least a year. And then maybe you talk about maybe transitioning him into the starting lineup next year if you think he can be that type of player. If not, I think he'd be a really good special teamer. And on day three, like, you're looking for guys like that. That leads me to Law, who it looked like, based on Brad's comments, they were studying Law when he was at Alabama. And Brad's just kind of like, who's this guy? He keeps standing out. Then he transfers to Kentucky his final year. Has what I think Justin mentioned, 505 of his 540 yards came after the catch. And you look at how they were using him, a lot of stuff behind the line of scrimmage, close to the line of scrimmage, just getting the ball in his hands and letting him make plays. A little bit of a Mickey Mouse offense they run there at Kentucky, but I think the Lions are probably more equipped to be more creative in the ways that he gets the ball and can take advantage of his skill sets. And the blocking mentality is going to fit in like a glove in that receiver room. Like, you have to be able to have that mentality to play for the Lions, and he has it. So Brad almost seemed like you guys are discrediting him as a gadget guy. I kind of see more upside here. So whether you want to call him a Khalif replacement or, you know, the guy after Greg Dortch, who's here on the one-year deal, you know, I think he can be a piece that sticks around. And then even, you know, six-round picks, seven-round picks, you know, you don't know what you're going to get in those guys. But it does seem strategic in the fact that they were looking for these – sub-package rushers.
Yeah.
And we don't know if they're going to make the roster, but they do have some space available if they want to duke it out in training camp and see, okay, which guy can make a play, which guy is going to be able to step up when we need someone to in those camp battles as those unfold. So I didn't hate the move, just double-dipping, getting an interior rusher. I thought they could use one since we saw how much of a problem that was last year when Levi wasn't playing and when Ali McNeil was hurt. That was a major issue. So I don't know if Skylar Gil Howard is the answer, but I don't hate the move to take a swing on one of those guys and just create competition on that back end of the roster. So from top to bottom, it's a draft that fits. It's a draft that makes sense. Probably more so than past years, but it felt surgical in how they approached this draft, and I think that's worth mentioning.
I want to go back to Greg Dortch for just a second, because that was a guy I I thought was a pretty obvious fit. Really liked the way Petzing used him in Arizona. Little gadgety, to be honest, but just laugh at here, because he had 206 yards receiving last year, 199 came after the catch, and the previous year 342 with 297 after the catch. So I mean, really just a very logical fit. But what I like with Law is you could throw him out on the perimeter with two other guys, and you could either throw the screen pass to him, or you could throw the screen pass to JMO or St. Brown, and he's going to get out there and block for you. So he offers a lot to an offense potentially as a number four.
Yeah, back to Abney for a second. I think the cliche we always hear when guys slide down the board and then teams take them is that they were, you know, this J-Rodge quote, sticking out like what? Like what? Like a sore thumb.
Yeah. Okay, I got it.
We did hear Brad Holmes say that, but he also went into a little more depth when he sat down with Dan Miller after the draft and told him, look, like, you know, we were kind of looking at Rolder and Abney there in the fourth round. And when we chose Rolder, you know, I said to myself, all right, Abney's probably going to be gone. Like, he's just not going to be there with our next pick at 157 or whatever it was. And sure enough, 40 picks later, he's still there. And at that point, they felt like it was a no-brainer. I think one of the reasons that Abney makes so much sense for the Lions is that, like, the only real knocks on his profile were maybe a lack of elite speed and a lack of size. And the way the Lions view him means that those knocks really won't matter. Like, if they're going to play him in the slot, he can get away with being undersized and maybe more quick than he is fast. And there was there's an account on Twitter that was sharing some Abney highlights. This is from James Foster. And he shared that Abney versus quick slants last season at Arizona State saw 12 targets and allowed just 3 catches, had 5 pass breakups, including an interception. And you can just see the way he closes on the ball. And that should serve him. That sort of, like, as Brad Holmes called it, short area suddenness should serve him really well in the slot. And I like the fact that it signals again towards, like, a possible shift in the Lions defense next season. And we heard Dan at the owners meetings talk about he and Shep kind of, like, not rebuilding, but reimagining the Lions defense this season, like trying to build some more flexibility or adaptability into it. And Dan had hinted a couple times at, you know, the defense wanting to play more nickel moving forward after being almost exclusively base last year and feeling pretty rigid by year's end. And so if nickel is indeed going to be part of the plan, it makes sense to have a good one. And it feels like Abney can be that almost from the jump for this team. So that feels like probably the best value pick in this draft for the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was what was he doing? Roller skating? Figure skating?
He had like a rollerblader.
Got a rollerblading background. I mean, the guy, apparently one of the bad, like 13 years old, he was dominating. I don't know. This guy, I mean, he's interesting. He feels like I don't know. This is probably getting way too ahead of ourselves, but he feels like the pick we're going to look back on in a couple of years and be like, yeah, this guy, like, it's like the Amon-Ra pick. Not saying he's going to be an all pro, but you don't know. So like in a couple of years, I think we'll look back and be like, how the hell did they get Keith Abney in the fifth round? Before we got 6 minutes left. I guess we can give our kind of final closing thoughts on just what else do you expect the Lions to do position wise, where Brad Holmes could still add. I know he signed like 2 guys today, signed another linebacker, signed a defensive tackle. But what other positions are you guys kind of eyeing as we kind of move past the draft here?
It's so funny. Those were the two, right? Like those were the two biggest for me. I don't think Joe Bashy or Tulafela Bashy. Thank you.
I didn't cover Michigan State.
Yeah. Like he's a special teams guy, right? Like he's played more than 200 reps on special teams last 3 years. Like the Lions are always all about those guys. You need plenty in the linebacker and safety room. I think the defensive tackle used to be a backup for DJ Reader as a nose tackle. I think that's kind of funny for 3 years in Cincinnati, but I'm just going to throw a UDFA to watch because why the hell not? I know the Lions had a really, really long run of UDFA making the roster every year that was snapped last year. But if you're talking about big bodied defensive tackles,
yeah.
Going to be a big reach here trying to say this name right.
Oh, here we go.
Aiden Kiana-Aina.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well done.
Notre Dame Cal. Had 44 run stops the last 2 years. If you look at his PFF grades from his entire college career, the run defense is great. He's 320 pounds. I think 100 tackles or thereabouts the last two seasons. So, you know, always around the ball. If you need, you know, if you still feel like that's a need, and I do, you know, the kind of that, that depth piece at nose tackle behind Tyleek Williams, you know, that that's kind of the UDFA I'm watching coming out of this, this crop of nine they've reportedly got pending agreements with.
Yeah. I was going to mention the same name. I'm glad you did it first, so I don't have to try and pronounce the last name, but look, the Lions lost their two biggest space eaters on their defensive line. Like DJ Reader and Tyleek Williams were really the only guys last year logging snaps in the A gap. I think Reader had like 270 and Lopez had like close to 90. And the next closest defender when it came to logging snaps in the A gap was Ali McNeil, who logged 40. And we all know like he's best deployed as a pass rushing three tech. And the same is probably going to prove true for Tyleek Williams. Like he's bigger, but he still profiles more similarly to Ali McNeil. So you start to wonder like who's going to be the guy in the middle next year who is like eating double teams to free up some of these guys around him to make plays. And you know, I had thought that like maybe DaQuan Jones from the Bills the past few years would have made some sense. Now he might be too pricey at this point of free agency to invest in, but when you look at the numbers for Aiden, I'm just going to call him Aiden at Cal. Like last year, he was by PFF anyways, one of the best run defending defensive tackles in the country. I think he ranked fifth in run defense grade. And the first two guys on that list were Kaden McDonald and Christian Miller, two high picks in this year's draft. So, you know, I think given the hole right now in the middle of that defensive line, he's someone that could come in and make an impact right off the jump. They need someone just to occupy space and occupy double teams in the middle, and he could do it.
You seeing this quick action from Jeff here? Just
that was smooth.
The browser smooth. All the way around as Colton froze.
I don't know what just happened. I froze for a little bit there. I think my pause screen was pretty nice, though. I have to look back at
that. Yeah, you were chilling.
I was chilling.
Colton, let me put this question out to you then, because it's one that's been pitched to me a few times by readers, and it's got me thinking a little bit. Just given what the Lions have kind of built up front, you know, I don't think Tyleek is a particularly dominant run defender, even at his size. Do you get the sense at all that maybe there is a little bit of a shift going on schematically with how they're going to play up front this year?
Potentially. I mean, maybe they're just putting more onus on their linebackers this year and saying, we have some really good run defenders. Let's make that our strength. And, you know, we really tried to go after these big run defenders, whether it's Roy Lopez, DJ Reader, Tyleek Williams. I think last year that was sort of the identity of what they wanted to be in the interior. But by the end of the season, they were still getting gashed in the run. So maybe they just sort of want to prioritize like those quicker guys that, again, I don't know if, you know, Skylar Gil Howard is going to be the answer, but maybe they do want some more pass rush juice in the interior, at least to try to break down pockets a little bit more effectively than they did last year. But it could just be as simple as, you know, we're getting rid of Alex Anzalone. You know, we'd love to keep him. The money isn't there, but we still have Malcolm, and Malcolm is a great run defender. Like, let's just put these high floor run linebackers on the field and see how it turns out. Maybe that's how they want to replace the big body types. Cause I thought that they might want more of a run stuffing defensive tackle at some point when you lose a guy like DJ Reader, when you lose a guy like Roy Lopez, but they don't seem too concerned by that right now. Maybe they go and add one before the season starts, but it does seem like they're at least trying to prioritize different body types in terms of pass rushers. So maybe that's where they're leaning a little bit.
Yeah. I want to give my, by the Dog and Pony Show Brewing pick of the week. Shout out to Cal. Dog and Pony Show Brewing had our first round draft party there. Go get yourself a beer, Bench and Lions Collective. you get a little bit of a discount. I want to give my pick of the week. You guys are talking about the defensive tackle out of Cal. I'll go Luke Altmaier from Illinois, who was projected to be a draft pick, and he went undrafted. But diving more into Luke Altmaier, I had him in a couple mock drafts, just kind of like, hey, take a flyer quarterback. I know you got Teddy Bridgewater, but that man could retire next year for all we know. And he's someone that is very interesting to me. He set the school record for career completion percentage and passer rating. He's clutch, led the nation with 7 game-winning drives in the final minute or overtime during his time in Illinois. And he played in a pro-style offense at Illinois. And he set the all record at the program in all time in program wins in 23 wins. So he wins. He's clutch. He's accurate. I like Luke Altmyer. I think he'll be an interesting name to watch as well. We'll get out of here. I'll switch this three box here. Let's cook a little bit. We'll get out of here. Appreciate you guys. Hit the like button. Subscribe. We'll be live next week. But until then, we will catch you all. Peace.